when we cross-reference the state of DeFi to, say, a mature financial ecosystem, it just occurred to us that fixed income product is one of the largest pillars of any financial sector. And it was absent in crypto. We were thinking about ideas and solution, and the splitting of yield appealed to us because it allowed us to build on top of other reputable and big protocols like Aave and Compound and take their yield-bearing assets and then do the splitting of PT and YT and allow these two components to be traded independently.
We've teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for 200-plus multi-chain teams. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click from blue-chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the whiff versus bonk. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, source off-chain and brought on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders. Marinade is a staking protocol on Solana and the only stake pool that delivers auto rebalancing, MEV rewards, and automatic downside protection with new protected staking rewards. Optimize your SOL stake with Marinade by hitting the link below.
Avalanche is a smart contract platform that has a novel consensus protocol, subnet infrastructure, and the Hyper SDK toolkit, which allows Web3 developers to easily launch custom, powerful blockchain solutions. You can start building today by checking out the link below.
Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of 0x Research. We have an awesome episode lined up today with Tien, one of the co-founders of Pendle, a DeFi protocol that enables users to tokenize and sell future yield. And as a reminder, before we dive into the interview, you can use code 0xresearch10 at app.blockworksresearch.com for 10% off your annual subscription. Now on to the interview with Tien. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So before we get started and dive deep into the details of this, can you kind of explain at a high level what Pendle is and how it works and maybe the problems it's aiming to solve?
Yeah, so Pendle is a protocol to tokenize and trade yield. So the way we do it is to tokenize a yield-bearing asset into PT and YT. So PT refers to principal token and then YT for yield token. So without going into the mechanics here, the use cases that we're trying to enable with Pendle is firstly to enable fixed rates. So like if a user wants to obtain fixed yield on a certain asset, then getting PT is an option. And then if on the other side, if a user wants to speculate on yield, then buying YT is the more capital efficient way of doing so.
Gotcha. And then one of the follow up there, I think Pendle has seen a few evolutions from the start, and it's actually been really exciting seeing you guys sort of evolve. Would you mind just walking us through the entire Pendle journey? Perhaps just going back to like why you started it, where you got the origination from, and sort of like going through the AMM idea and sort of V2 and just walking us through the life cycle of the product so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea of Pendle came about during DeFi summer in 2020, because like my co-founders and I, we were farming a lot of food coins that were offering 10, 20,000% APY. We wanted to capture as much yield as we could, but there was no instrument for us to do so. Because on the one hand, we knew that the yields were fleeting, so we were very comfortable with just taking a lower yield, but try to lock it in while we can, while we're still, while the rates were still relevant. But it wasn't like there was no option to do so. And when we cross-reference the state of DeFi to, say, a mature financial ecosystem, it just occurred to us that fixed income product is one of the largest pillars of any financial sector. And it was absent in crypto. So I think that was the core motivation for us to think about a product that could serve our needs, because I think innately we all value some sort of certainty, and we couldn't do that on crypto. So we were thinking about ideas and solution, and the splitting of yield appealed to us because it allowed us to build on top of other reputable and big protocols like Aave and Compound. I mean, at that point, they were already sitting on around $20 billion of TVL collectively. So we thought it would make sense for us to be complementary to these big protocols and take their yield-bearing assets and then do the splitting of PT and YT and allow these two components to be traded independently. So we went live in June 2021, not to a lot of fanfare, because I think it was a very crowded time and there were so many different products that were out during then, and they were offering much better and more attractive yields than what Pendle could do. So we didn't see a lot of traction in the beginning. And I think aside from just the APY itself, the UI UX wasn't the best, because it was the first implementation and there was no precedence. So we had to make a lot of assumptions about how users would react or respond to certain kind of numbers. And the learning curve was actually pretty steep, because we were introducing terms that were quite native to Pendle, right? Like YTPT for one. And then there were also implied yields and things like that. So it's a lot to absorb, and no one has the patience to go through that. But I think we saw some sort of hope when we listed a very degen asset in the form of Wonderland Time. They were, again, I can't remember exactly what was the APY, but it was like 4 to 5 digit. So when we listed that asset, we saw a lot of traction. We were, I think in the beginning, we were probably doing maybe 100K, 50K kind of trading volume on a daily basis. But when we had that very degen asset and we started to tokenize yield and make the yield tradable, we reached a peak of $5 million in trading volume in a very short span of time. But the whole thing, I think it came down fairly quickly when there were some incidents over at Wonderland, and then the maturity also, we reached a maturity, and then we decided not to continue the pool. But you know, fast forward, I think we had a lot of learnings there, and observations of how users behaved on our platform. So we took a lot of that observations and learnings and incorporated those into Pendle V2. So for a good part of 2022, it was just us rebuilding the product. And then eventually we launched Pendle V2 at the end of 2022. So last year, 2023, we had relatively good traction. It was climbing steadily, but we were very fortunate to have been associated with a few narratives. So for example, in January last year, we were more affiliated with LST narrative. So I remember in January last year, we developed a case study together with Aura Balancer and Rocket Pool in enabling users to earn something like 15% APY on ETH. So that was a pretty popular product, and I think it gave us the first glimpse of what users would probably want from our product. And then later in Q1, we also became more associated with the Arbitrum branding, because we decided to go on to L2 because of gas considerations. And then at that point in time, Arbitrum was also gaining very, very good traction.
So maybe zooming out a little bit, by the way, that was really helpful context. I appreciate the history lesson on Pendle, but can you maybe express, like, from a position standpoint, like, how would you express being bullish on the ETH staking yield as a STEETH holder, or bearish the ETH staking yield? And conversely, like, how would you express, you know, being bullish or bearish the ETH underlying price?
Yeah, so I think, like, if you're bullish on the ETH staking yield, let's say, because usually it fluctuates anywhere between 3% and 6%. And let's say you think that it's going to go beyond 6%, what the best way to do it is probably to buy the YT. So buying YT, you're effectively buying into the yield accrual between the time of entry all the way to maturity. Because here, the assumption is that at maturity, your annualized yield is going to be more than, let's say, 6%. And if it's trading at, say, 4% today, at maturity, you would collect more yield just by holding YT, paid out from Lido. And at maturity, if you're correct, you would be earning extra yield from what you paid. So that difference becomes your earning. Now, in contrast, if you do not believe that the yield is going to be high in, let's say, at maturity, what you can do is you can sell away your YT. So after minting PTYT, sell away the YT so that you don't get exposed to the floating yield. You convert that into stable coin, for example, or the underlying asset immediately, and then you can use it to deploy into some other venues or just hold it. So I think these are just some ways, but of course, like, you can also express a similar views in the form of PT. So PT is basically a reverse of what you would do with YT. So in the event that you are bullish, then you can sell PT, and if you're bearish on the yield, just buy PT.
Gotcha. That's a super helpful explanation. I think one thing that I've been super impressive is just the general growth, especially in the sort of LRT narrative part of Pendle's journey. I mean, I wrote a research report on Pendle last year. At that point, it was around August. You guys were sitting at maybe 140 million in TVL. And I think at that point, like, annualized fees was like maybe 150,000 or something. And today you're at basically 4 billion TVL. Fees have gone parabolic in conjunction, at least on DeFi Llama, it says it's around 20 plus million annualized. Why do you think that so much growth came from sort of like incorporating Pendle into the LRT narrative versus like all of these other narratives?
Yeah, so I think like for us, we've definitely benefited substantially from these major narratives. And I think the restaking narrative is very substantial because it's almost like the baseline expectation of yield across crypto in general. So if there's something that that is as revolutionary as Eigenlayer coming about, naturally there's going to be a lot of interest and demand for it. So I think for us, again, looking back over the last 1.5 years of operating Pendle V2, we have had several accelerated growth periods, and all of this happened because we were able to associate our brand with these big movements. So we were leveraging on the likes of LSTs, Arbitrum, and Real World Assets and LRT to give us that momentum to grow. And then more recently, I think we're also exploring, like, just expanding the points narrative. So moving slightly beyond and above LRT, and also worked on non-LRT assets like Athena, but achieving a similar kind of purpose to enable points trading and users to speculate on yield.
Following up there, there's a lot of like interesting sort of trading pools on Pendle. You know, like, some are like basically duplicates of each other, but they have like extra points bonuses. How do you think about those partnerships? Are those like behind the scene conversations that always occur with like these different LRT teams, or is it sort of like more of them approaching you? So what's like the, I guess, like the BD sort of partnership strategy there with like all of this points craziness?
Yeah, so I think the BD aspect is actually very important. So the product is important, but in this particular instance, as with most of the different narrative implementations that we've had in the past year, BD is definitely an important part of it. So specific to the points, what BD has to do is to identify the right kind of protocols and projects to work with, and then come to an agreement on something as simple as a multiplier, because we are positioning Pendle as a venue to help grow TVL. So if we look at Pendle today, Pendle actually accounts for a pretty sizable portion of TVL across most of these bigger LRTs, as well as Athena. And I think when we started out, it matters who we work with. And the first example is actually very important to construct a use case that allows us to go to the other protocols and then just give them something as a reference. So very fortunately for us, our first partner is Athena, EtherFi, and they were also very generous with the multiplier. So when we suggested a multiplier and they were receptive to it, we went with it. And I think in a relatively short span of time, we saw a very significant surge in the interest. And then the rest of it is really just trying to improve on the UI UX. So from the start of the year until now, we have refined the UI UX quite substantially, added limit order, added like the order book so that users can see the liquidity and the depth of the pool. We also added a points UI just to give user an idea of how much leverage that they are entitled to if they were to purchase YT, for example. So these are the little things that happen subsequently, but that's more on the product side. And then, of course, like for BD, it's always a matter of identifying who best to work with and what kind of products that the community wants to see.
I wanted to follow up there on sort of like the explosive LRT growth. Obviously, there's just a lot of sort of idiosyncratic trading opportunities on Pendle right now for a lot of these LRT tokens. You're seeing fixed APYs of 50, 60, sometimes 70%. Are you concerned about once all of these LRT protocols launch their tokens, their season 1 points program ends, that trading volume like significantly subsides? Or how are you thinking about life after like all of these protocols, LRT protocols launch their tokens and like points program ends?
Yeah, so I think with points program, my view is that the points program are always points programs are always the intermediary between, like, say, a mainnet and the actual token launch. So it is a way for protocols to gain traction and prior to the actual token launch. So for us, I think the strategy here is to be aggressive, to identify the protocols that we can work with. And then I think when the protocol is ready to convert those points into tokens, then the pools will mature, and then we probably wouldn't continue. But in the meantime, what we can do is to identify different segments that we can work with, because I'm of the opinion that points has now become quite a substantial go-to-market strategy for a lot of these protocols, right? Whether it's L1, L2, whichever it is. Like, as an example, we are working with Zirkit to enable certain markets and deposits into Zirkit's contracts. The chain is not live, but they already have a substantial amount of traction because they just surged past $1 billion in TBL in the last week or so. So we think this is potentially an angle that we can work on beyond just LRT, post Eigenlayer, post Athena. I think that there are many other options that we can work with.
Wormhole is the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain bridges and applications. With over 1 billion messages sent and 40 billion in value transferred, Wormhole leads the industry in cross-chain message volume and total value transferred. If you're a builder, Wormhole has an extensive suite of tools and infrastructure to securely build multi-chain applications. You can use Wormhole to power DeFi, NFTs, governance, and so much more. And Wormhole supports over 30 blockchains and 6 different runtimes. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Fill out a form, prove that you've listened to today's episode to receive a Pro app, and you'll get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click from blue chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the whiff versus bonk. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, source off-chain, and broad on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders. Marinade is optimized Solana staking. Stake natively or liquid stake with Marinade and get the same high-performance delegation strategy that thousands are using today to stake your SOL to over 100 of the best Solana validators. The delegation strategy is a first of its kind and only possible on Solana. It delegates your SOL to the network's best validators with no smart contract risk. In addition, Marinade has just built a new and improved delegation strategy that delivers maximum performance with auto-rebalancing, MEV rewards, and automatic downside protection with new protected staking rewards, and this allows for maximum decentralization for Solana too. Optimize your SOL staking today with Marinade by hitting the link below.
The age of interoperability is here. With the launch of Teleporter, Avalanche becomes a seamlessly linked network of many sovereign blockchains that communicate so smoothly they feel like a single chain. Teleporter is an EVM compatible cross-chain communication protocol built on top of Avalanche Fork Messaging. It allows any EVM chain on Avalanche to send messages, assets, and data to one another in a simple, fast, affordable, and secure way. Teleporter and Avalanche Fork Messaging provide a new foundation for how Avalanche blockchains can communicate and how developers can easily build cross-chain applications out of the box. Build anything you want, any way you want, on the eco-friendly blockchain designed for Web3 devs. Check it out by clicking the link below.
Ren mentioned the exploding fee revenue generation, and I know Pendle, the token, plays a role here. Can you kind of explain Pendle, VE, Pendle, and value accrual for the token slash protocol in general?
Yeah, so when Pendle gets locked up for like between 1 week and 2 years, it can be locked for VE Pendle. So VE Pendle actually serves three purposes. Firstly, it functions as a booster for the liquidity provider. So if you have a LP position on Pendle and you have VE Pendle, you should be entitled to some form of multiplier up to 2.5 times of the base APY. So that's one. And then secondly, which is also very important, right, is the voting, like it functions as a voting right for incentive channeling. Because on a weekly basis, there's an emission that the protocol could use to incentivize liquidity. And the distribution of the incentive is 100% dependent on the votes. So like, for example, if I want this, I want incentive to be channeled to the pool of my choice, I vote for my pool. And then if the pool gets more incentive, then naturally I become a beneficiary as well. And the third is a follow-up to the second. Now, as a voter of pools, incentives, I'm also entitled to some fees. So because the pool will generate swap fees from AMM trades, as a voter of the pool, if the pool makes money, I can earn a portion of that.
Interesting. Okay. So it's very similar to Curve and Curve gauges, it sounds like. So have you seen similar dynamics play out with VE Pendle, in that, as with VE Curve, with like large DAOs kind of accumulating, or is it more individuals you think that you've seen making these votes?
So at the moment, it's mostly individuals. We do have 3 liquid lockers in the form of Equilibria, PenPy, and Stake DAO. So collectively across the board, about 20% of all Pendle is locked in a VE Pendle contract, and a sizable portion of that went through these three different outlets.
I had a curious question heading back to the LRT side of things. Have you guys ever considered issuing your own LRT or LST, given that just thinking it through it super quickly, it seems like vertical integration might potentially be a move since you guys have a need to attract that liquidity anyway. So maybe like there's additional fee revenue or additional like stickiness from launching your own LST and LRT. Curious to hear if you've ever thought about that.
No. Okay. strategically speaking, we are better off working with everyone and then becoming the venue to trade for users to express a view than to be in the field and compete against everyone else. I don't think we're that great in that sense. And we're better off sticking to our core.
Have you seen any interesting primitives like outside of Pendle and like the core contributors to the Pendle protocol, like any integrations with PTs or YTs? And if you haven't, which ones would you like to see pop up, like interesting use cases for these tokens?
So I think PT as an asset, as a collateral for money markets, can actually be quite interesting. We've seen several money markets like Silo, Dolomite, TimeSwap taking in PT as collateral, and then it encouraged some sort of looping strategies for users to maximize their yield, fixed yield. So that is in itself, like, I think quite exciting. I believe that there is also room for CDP product, because like PT, even at maturity, right? At maturity, PT will be redeemable one-to-one for the underlying. So effectively, if there is a CDP product and PT is used as a collateral, I think it will function very similarly to the likes of, say, liquidity using some other assets. But in this case, the earning of the the collateral fixed yield is known. And then lending out, just letting it out to earn additional U would be pretty interesting. I'm not too sure if anyone's building a CDP product on PT, but I think it's not a very difficult concept to imagine. And then there's also index of YTs, because I think YT is actually a pretty interesting asset. It represents the yield and currently the points. So if you buy into, say, an LRT's YT, you have an exposure in the points of the LRT protocol as well as the eigenlayer points. And of course, on top of that, the native staking yield. So I think the role of an index could be to diversify the exposure to the different types of LRT. So instead of buying individually the different types of YTs, I can just subscribe to an index product, and it helps purchase and gain exposure to all these different LRTs. So yeah, it is, I think, a relatively reasonable product, not very difficult to educate users about, and I think it should gain decent traction.
Just a random idea for integration, but I feel like integration with a perp dex for PT might make a lot of sense, just because your collateral will be yield bearing, and that might be an additional advantage for the perp dex. But just throwing ideas out there.
Yeah, maybe something to propose.
Yeah. Another question I wanted to ask is, what are some interesting user behaviors that you see for Pendle? You know, like, what's the average trade size? What's the frequency? What's the leverage involved? Is it like a small, like, degen holding like $100 of like a certain PT, or is it like institutional capital in Pendle sort of like doing an interest rate sort of like derivative swap trade?
Yeah. So I think in terms of user behavior, I'd say last year and this year, it's changed quite a bit, because the demographic has become more diversified and it's also increased. So last year, market wasn't doing so well. people who are interested in a product like Pendle, they're generally more sophisticated. So we were not at the point of targeting big institutions, but there were individuals who work for big institutions with good understanding of derivatives. They would take part in Pendle markets because to them, it's probably not a very difficult concept to understand and appreciate. So I think a bulk of our user last year was composed of this profile. So sophisticated, relatively degen with a good understanding of derivative. Now this year, because of the points and because of like a better display of implied leverage for YT, PT, whatever it is, and because of the more attractive numbers on fixed yield, LP, we've attracted a broader base of users. So some of these users, they don't necessarily know how to read the chart. They might not have very good understanding of what yield, implied yield, APY, APR, the differences are. And we've also encountered users who would ape without really knowing what the product is about. So it's very mixed, I'd say. But we've also seen bigger institutions participating in size. In the past year, I think we wouldn't like any trade that's several hundred thousand of dollar would be considerably big and rare. But this year, because for example, PT of LRT assets, they could trade at 50, 60 or 70% of fixed APY, and the pools are reasonably sizable. Most of them have more than $100 million in liquidity. And as an institution, 50% APY, fixed APY is very attractive. And if you're managing size, you can go in 2,000, 3,000 ETH and lock in that yield. It makes a lot of difference to the overall P&L. So this year, we started to see more of that kind of behavior. And when users bidded the YT price up to a certain level, then because when YT price gets very inflated, the discount on PT also becomes much more substantial. And then we see big whales coming in to scoop up a sizable amount of PT and then rebalance the dynamics between PT and YT again.
I wanted to follow up there on the institution front. I know you guys have a head of institution, Ken, and I'm curious what those conversations look like. What are some like common pushbacks that you receive from like large institutional fund managers when you tell them about Pendle and how they can potentially trade on Pendle?
It also varies quite substantially. So generally, I'd say like if it's a hedge fund, like DeFi specific, let's say like $20 to $50 million in AUM, not a lot of convincing needed to do. Most of them would be more concerned or look deeper into the security aspect of things. So by now, we have already done 7 rounds of audit. We take security very seriously. And then we're also expecting another round of audit next month just to make sure like our contracts, the contract reviews are updated. So I'd say like for DeFi natives, that is usually the consideration. For other types of institutions that are maybe more TradFi, but looking into DeFi opportunities, I think a couple of different considerations are firstly, like whether so aside from the basic security considerations, it's also a matter of insurance. Like having some sort of insurance products, whether it's by third party or directly by the protocol, would give them some form of assurance. And then, overall APY. Like everybody cares about APY, but I think being able to get like a certain amount of APY in size is a fairly big consideration. So just to do a comparison, right? Last year, because the protocol was significantly smaller, if we were to, let's say, trade $50,000 worth of YT, it would incur maybe 1% to 2% of price impact. This year, it's a different case. But if they were to do $1 million or $2 million worth of YT trade, I would suspect that the price impact would be also very considerable. So it becomes more operational considerations like that. And of course, then you have the very big ones. They are already trading crypto products, but because of regulatory reasons, they are still not involved in DeFi.
From a builder's perspective, I'd love to just hear why you chose Arbitrum and how that experience has gone. I believe you guys were a recipient of the first round of STIPS, which I'm sure was pretty helpful. But I guess just looking back on the decision to deploy on Arbitrum, do you have any regrets or what kind of aspects went into that decision?
Definitely no regrets. We've been great beneficiary of the growth of Arbitrum. So we grew together with Arbitrum. Arbitrum Foundation has also been very supportive. When we went over, we're the first yield trading product on the chain. They help with education. They help, aside from just monetary support, it was also publicity. And we needed that kind of endorsement. As a product that, I think this is very valid for most builders. The product can be good, but if it doesn't have any kind of recognition, it will still be a bad product. So we've learned from seeing many other protocols, the tech is solid and excellent, but no one's really talking about it. So they end up not getting a lot of traction, and then they become forgotten. We don't want to go down that route, and Arbitrum provides a lot more support on the on intangibles like this, more so than some other ecosystems that we've worked with or spoken with, right? So I think that actually makes a lot of difference.
Are there any aspirations to go multi-chain with deployments, or are you guys just focusing on building out the product within Arbitrum and finding product market fit there?
Yeah, so the expansion to other ecosystems always on the table. But now, because of resources and time, it's also a consideration. There's an opportunity cost. If we want to go, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for us to go too broad, because Pendle is a second order derivative. And with us, Pendle would only make sense when there's a layer of primitive that is already very established. For example, LRT protocols, if they're not on a certain ecosystem, then it really doesn't matter to have Pendle there, because there wouldn't be any yield to trade. So for now, we are taking a very, I think, pragmatic approach and just looking at how some of our core partners expand. If, let's say, Athena expands to Mantle, we went ahead with it and deployed a Mantle implementation. And if they want to go somewhere else, that would really, we'll definitely consider it much more seriously.
Yeah, no, I think that is definitely the right move. You guys are live on Ethereum, Arbitrum, BNB Chain, Optimism, and Mantle today. And just wherever the narrative goes to, you guys are very opportunistic in a good way. And I think that makes a lot of sense. One question I did want to ask is, my knowledge may not be perfect here, but in the world of TradFi and interest rate swaps or derivatives, right? For example, a fixed for floating rate swap in TradFi, one party streams the fixed rate to the other, one party streams the floating rate to the other, and maybe both of them put up some form of collateral, right? But in my head, that collateral probably doesn't need to be the full amount of collateral needed to support that amount of yield being streamed, as long as maybe some small amount of collateral to account for the differences between the float and fixed yield. Whereas for Pendle's case, you kind of need one unit of the underlying to be able to sort of generate this one unit of yield type of trading opportunity. So I think it's fair to say that Pendle is a lot less capital efficient than sort of the world of TradFi interest rate derivatives. Do you think that's a concern long term? And how do you think like we potentially overcome that like lack of capital efficiency for interest rate derivatives on chain?
Yeah, so concern, not so much. I think this is a safer way to enable rates trading, at least with respect to Pendle V2. But I do see the point that you brought up, and that is actually one of the components that we are looking to incorporate in our design for V3. Because yeah, again, like TradFi is all about capital efficiency. So and then leverage, like what you pointed out. So these are very significant considerations. I'm in no position to disclose too much, but I think this is something that we're internally very much looking forward to.
I guess that's a good time to ask, what is on the roadmap for the rest of the year? What are your main priorities, if you're able to provide any more clarity on that front?
Yeah, so we have hit a pretty sweet spot with the points trading, and we want to double down on that. But at the same time, we also need to construct and improve on the product. So the effort will split between continuing our traction with points and building V3. So yeah, I think we are pretty focused there.
Following up on that question, 10 years down the road, which is an eternity in crypto, where would you like Pendle to be? What would you like Pendle to be?
Yeah, I've always aspired Pendle to be known as a blue chip product within DeFi. I hope that because of Pendle, we can see much bigger impact across the DeFi ecosystem. In exactly how, I'm not too sure. But I'd like to think that we can enable a more circular ecosystem, more efficient trades. And because of the way people trade yield, something like yield curve can happen. And then, more fixed rate products. So it's very abstract at the moment, I know. But I think one of the biggest draws of DeFi is really just APY's yield. And as long as yield exists, there will be a room for Pendle to work on. And I think right now we're barely touching the surface because there's a lot more different types of yield that we're still not working on. For example, borrowing yield, which is, I'd say, a bread and butter of any money market. Funding rates, lending rates. So these are all the different types of rates that I think we can work on, but we have not really started on targeting these yet.
One thing that you guys do really well is education. And I think that's been like a slow process over the past few months. You know, you guys have that Pendle intern account, which always puts out like great trading ideas. You guys have a bunch of educational resources at this point. Like, it's like lessons literally on like Pendle finance, the PT, the YT, sort of like the complexities of the protocol. How do you think about educating the users over time? And like, what are some strategies that you think have worked really well?
Education is very difficult. If anything, I think this is probably one of the most challenging aspects of running a complex product, because like Uniswap, you don't really have to educate. It's very intuitive. But for something like Pendle, like it or not, I think this is what we have to deal with. And we see it as an opportunity for us to inculcate certain concepts and then like give user a better understanding of how things work, the mechanics. In terms of education, I don't think there's to be specific, in terms of strategy, I think it really varies from product to product. But for us specifically, what we did was, aside from just having the materials in place, it's also about the dissemination of it. I think far too many times, a lot of people focus on like the construct of the content, but they don't think too much about the distribution of the content. For us, we're trying to balance both. So content, it has to be in place first and foremost. And then in terms of dissemination, right, it's identifying the right types of people to work with, because if they get the product, and most of them, after they realize the potential of Pendle, they become very strong advocates. So we started to, basically in the early days, we were identifying high quality content creators to work with. They might not necessarily be the biggest account, but they put in the effort to learn about the mechanics, and then they became very strong advocates. And then they cultivated a community of their own, and they passed on the knowledge. So that's one. I think another very important strategy that we went after was to construct use cases. So, I mean, like case studies, right? It's easy to say, like, this protocol can do this and that, but it always helps when people can actually see how things work, and then they try it, and then they appreciate the process. So when we think about education, it's not just about like the material, and of course, like dissemination is important, right? But we try to reinforce all this material with actual case studies that protocols and third party protocols, users and funds can refer to quite easily.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know that trying to get people educated on things is not easy, but I'm sure the points craze has definitely helped with motivating people to learn, which is great for you guys. But I was curious, wanted to throw you a softball on just market opportunity here. How big is the interest rate derivative market in traditional finance, and how big is it on chain today? And like, where do you see this growing over the next maybe 2 to 3 years, and what changes need to be made in order to get there?
Again, very tough question. It's very big. It's a couple of hundred trillion in size in TradFi. Specific to crypto, I think it's a fraction of that. Also because like crypto is significantly smaller than the like TradFi out there. But in terms of enablers, I think what we do is quite important in enabling the market to grow, especially in the form of V3, because ultimately when we look at like crypto, a big part of it is yield, right? So we're not just looking at ETH staking yield, and ETH staking yield at the moment is probably the reference rate. But at the same time, if we look across different ecosystems like Cosmos and Solana, these are all different yields that we could potentially capture and trade. And there is a whole lot of dependency on like the Solana staking yield, for example, because there are a lot of products that are building on top of Solana and a lot of products building on top of Cosmos. So if we could enable some instrument, I hope we could enable that. If we do that, then I think we can reduce a layer of uncertainty for a lot of these protocols. And with some certainty, I think, yeah, maybe more different types of use cases could happen.
I think, Sam, do you have any last questions? I think that's all the questions I had on my end. But Tien, is there any sort of last final thoughts that you wanted to share with our audience, a call to action perhaps, or where they could find you?
Yeah, like to find me, I'm available on Twitter, like TN_Pendle. Also on Discord, most of the time, so it's not very difficult to reach me. I think we have a fairly interesting lineup of assets that we would be listing in the next couple of weeks. We are constantly experimenting with different types of narratives, and hopefully we could find something more meaningful that could serve the community better. We're here to stay, so like there's a lot more that we want to achieve. And I think, yeah, the points trading narrative has given us a very, very important boost, but we're definitely not stopping here.
Nice. That's great to hear. And for the listeners, there are some really, really fantastic trading opportunities out there on Pendle. I am kind of disappointed at myself for not being more active on Pendle, especially with the LRT craze, because I know some people made a decent amount of money from farming some of the, whether that's like Athena or like LRT poos on there. So there's still time. But thank you so much for coming on, Tien. We'll have to get you back on at some point once V3 launches and all of these new markets are incorporated later down the year.
Sounds good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep, take care.
We have teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for over 200+ multi-chain dApps. Wormhole isn't just a bridge. It's the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain applications. So go and claim your unique Wormhole NFTs just for 0x Research listeners today. Hit the link in the description to fill out a form and to prove that you've listened to today's episode and receive a PoApp. You get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT.